Well, thank you very much. And it's great, as ever, to be back here at Herbert Smith. I've forgotten how unpleasant Northern Line is, actually, when you're coming in here in the morning. I had a bit of nostalgia making my way in. And I often talk about my experiences here at Herbert Smith because so many of the experiences I had here inform so much of my work and are so valuable in the work that I do as the Shadow Secretary of State for Business. And of course, Rashida, it's good to be here during Black History Month. I just caught the tail end of it. I've kind of left it to the last minute, haven't I? And I remember, actually, it's worth reflecting, that when I started here in 2002, going some way back now, I was one of just three black fee earners at Herbert Smith. And usually when I came to meetings here on this very floor with third parties and clients, I was almost always the only face of colour in the room. And, you know, you didn't really think about it too much. You didn't let it trouble you too much. It was just, I suppose, a fact of life. But it's good to be returning to Herbert Smith today when I know there are substantially more black fee earners at this firm, which is a fantastic thing and is good progress. And, of course, there's always going to be room for improvement. But you know what? I'm just delighted to be speaking to a room full of black city professionals. You know, there used to be a time when you wouldn't have had enough black city professionals to fill this room. There used to be a time that we all knew each other so well because there were so few of us. And that's no longer the case. And I think that is that's a good thing. It shows that we are moving on and that the obstacles black people are facing in this country are perhaps falling away a bit and we are making some progress. And when I say we, I mean Britain, you know, whatever colour you are. I think we all, regardless of our race, whatever walk of life we're in, we all have this powerful desire to live in a country, in a society where people have the opportunity to achieve their dreams, their aspirations, regardless of their background. It's a social contract, if you like. Shared responsibilities, going with shared opportunities and therefore shared prosperity. And that's because if you hold back any part of our society, and in this context, I suppose we're talking about black and minority ethnic Britons, then we hold ourselves back as a country. And that's something we can't afford to do at a time when the leader of the Labour Party, Ed Miliband, has said, we need the talents of everybody to help shape our future in this modern, complex, competitive world. So progress is, of course, vital for each of you individuals, but actually it is absolutely vital for us as a country. And, of course, the progress I think we've made is now very much embedded in the British psyche. You know, Emily Sandé, Tiny Temper, these guys provide the soundtrack to our lives. Sadie Smith, you know, all those people on the tube with me this morning, she's a regular on people's Kindles. The entire country celebrates when yet again Mo Farah, Jess Ennis win another gold medal and go through the finishing line. Now that's one view of progress, and I think it's an important one. But there are other perspectives on progress too, which can no longer be ignored. Pick up a copy of the Power List, which is published every year, the annual list of Britain's most influential black people, and you will also see those beyond the arts, entertainment, music, achieving excellence in other fields, like here in the city, in our boardrooms, in science, in engineering, where black people are not so prominent. So you'll see people like Tiam Tijian, the CEO of Prudential, in the Power List Hall of Fame. He became the chief executive officer of the Prudential in 2009, and under his leadership, the value of that company, one of the biggest in our country, has doubled in value. That's no mean feat. You'll see Mo Ibrahim, who came to this country, fantastic story, came to this country from Sudan in 1974, started working as a BT engineer, right? and then ended up founding Celtel International, one of Africa's leading mobile phone companies, and with over 24 million subscribers. This is a BT engineer. 24 million subscribers in 14 countries. Celtel was sold in 2004 for $3.4 billion. That's not a bad return. So, you see, I think it's so important that we use Black History Month, even if you pick the last day like me, not only to celebrate those on whose shoulders we stand, who broke down the barriers in times past, but also those who are pioneering a new future today. Both are absolutely vital to give our young people in particular the confidence and inspiration to back themselves and go after their ambitions and dreams. Because look, if young people, young Black people, can't see people who look like them editing our newspapers, people who look like them sitting on the Supreme Court, people who look like them running our great British companies, how can we give them the hope that if they work hard, they can make it too, and they can do it? And shining a light on our many role models is absolutely crucial, because so often, too many of them are ignored. And one of the reasons for this, let's be absolutely frank, is because our broadcast and film media have a tendency to stereotype Black people in this country, to present an image of Black people that suggests we can succeed in sport, entertainment and music, but not necessarily in other fields. And you know what? If I'm wrong about this, why do so many of our Black British actors have to go to the US to get roles, to get cast in roles outside of the stereotypes? Too many in the British film and television industries simply don't cast Black British actors in roles that fall outside certain stereotypes. And you know what? It's often only after they've gone to the States and made it big in the States that they can then come back and get more varied and more roles here in the UK. That is unacceptable and has got to change. In 2013, as a society, we cannot go on allowing people to default to lazy stereotypes. We can't allow that to happen. So I think we all recognise that though we've made great strides towards a more equal society, we still have a long way to go. And, you know, the facts speak for themselves. As a non-white person in Britain today, you're twice as likely to be unemployed as a white person. If you are a young Black graduate, you'll earn on average only 3/4 of what a white graduate earns. If you have an African-sounding surname, you need to send about twice as many job applications as those with traditional English names. And that isn't even to get a job, that's just to get an interview. And look, I'm being generous here. I haven't even gone to the overrepresentation of Black people in our mental health, criminal justice systems, the disproportionate number of Black Caribbean boys who get excluded in our schools. So the message is clear. If you believe, and I think we all do here, that we are all created equal and ours should be an equal society, then we cannot let up. Our commitment cannot waver. We cannot be complacent. And that's why, I'm a politician, so I'm going to be a little bit party political. But look, that is why I am proud to be Labour. Because over the years, it was my party, the Labour Party, that enshrined non-discrimination as a guiding principle not only of our beliefs, but also of our laws, from the Race Relations Act of 1965 to the 2006 Anti-Age Discrimination Regulations that lawyers here will be advising on now. And during our most recent period in office, we did what the previous Conservative government failed to do, and that was to set up the all-important judicial inquiry into the disgraceful mishandling by the police of the investigation into the murder of Stephen Lawrence. And of course, that was an inquiry that formally acknowledged for the first time what so many of us knew to be true, that there is institutional racism in our country, and we sought to deal with it. And of course, you know, the real credit for that inquiry goes to the Lawrence family for their refusal to give up in their demand for justice. And I'm proud to say, to be standing here today at a time when Baroness Doreen Lawrence this month formally became a Labour peer following her nomination by Ed Miliband. And our tradition of working to stamp out discrimination in all its forms, deliberate or subconscious, wherever it exists, continues. So last week, our new Shadow Equalities Minister, Gloria De Piero, launched our race equality strategy, and we're consulting on that with everybody. So please do visit our website, have your say on that document, tell us what you would like to see a future Labour government do. So I've talked about the progress made, the need to tackle the stereotypes, the ongoing quest for race equality. But beyond this, I have to say, I think we're unlikely to see future generations of black minority ethnic people in this country go on and do better than the last if we focus on race inequality alone. We have also got to address issues of class and social mobility, which are also holding back people as well. And social mobility, it's like this annoying policy-type dry phrase for something that is so fundamental to us all, which is, you know, to make possible the basic desire of people to create a better future for themselves and their families. And, you know, I've worked very hard to get to where I've got to, but I don't believe, well, I think I would have had to work a hell of a lot harder had I not come from a middle-class background. And let me just be clear, this is an either-or argument that I'm making. I'm not saying that race doesn't hold people back anymore. I'm not saying that those inequalities aren't problematic. But what I am saying is that we also do, in addition to that, need to look at these issues of class and social mobility. You know, when I was growing up, the black middle class was very much in its infancy. And I think it's a great thing that it's now clearly growing. However, unless we make social mobility for everyone our driving purpose, people won't be able to meet their aspirations, we won't be a more equal society, and we won't make the most of our potential as a country. 2 weeks ago, the government's Social Mobility and Child Poverty Commission couldn't have been clearer. It's quite depressing, actually. Britain remains a deeply divided society, and economic disadvantage still strongly shapes life's opportunities. They say there's a real danger that social mobility could go into reverse in the first part of this century if we don't act. So our goal is not only to eradicate prejudice in all its forms and reduce racial and other inequalities, but to create a society where if you want to get on, you want to move from that flat into a house, you want to go from the shop floor to the boardroom, we empower you to do it. We want to create a society in which the son of a bus driver can go on and not just run the company but own it, where the teenager working on the checkouts at the flagship Sainsbury's in Streatham Common, she can think about going on to become the CEO, a society where the budding Richard Branson's in the Tulse Hill Estate, which is one of the most deprived parts of my constituency, can turn their ideas into a thriving business and make their first million. Because it's in all our interest, this. It creates wealth for the individual. Of course it does that, and that's a good thing. But jobs and growth, and of course tax receipts, if they pay their taxes, which they all will do, hopefully, for the exchequer. But that, look, that's, let's face it, that isn't our country today. Social mobility has stalled. And as Alan Milburn, the chairman of that commission, said, over the last few decades, we have become a wealthier society. But we haven't really become, despite all the good things my government did, a fairer one. So increasing social mobility and empowering people to meet their aspirations goes to the heart of my politics. It goes to the heart of the values of the Labour Party. It goes to the heart of the One Nation Britain you may have heard our leader Ed Miliband talking about. Your race or your class should not stand in the way of opportunity. We're absolutely clear about that. Now, we sought to increase social mobility in government. We invested heavily in education, of course, with Sure Start and thousands of new children's centres. I've got 9 in my constituency. Just a few of the measures to help give our children a better start in life. Important drivers of life chances. But that, you know, that wasn't enough. And while we managed to stop income inequality growing, we weren't able to reverse the huge growth in inequality that had occurred in the 2 decades before 1997. And our achievements during our years in office have since been rolled back. Alan's report was absolutely clear about this. Austerity now is hitting the poorest hardest, and long-term challenges remain unresolved. Childcare quality is too variable, never mind childcare costs, which are too high. The most deprived areas still have 30% fewer good schools. Not enough state school children are going to the best universities. The number of young people unemployed for more than 2 years is at a 20-year high. Senior professionals in firms like all those here and those that surround us are still more likely to be privately educated and privileged men. But credit where credit's due, the government deserves praise for setting up this social mobility commission. However, as I've said, the report and its sobering conclusions challenge us to have a serious conversation about how we secure a future of opportunity for all. So today, I've called on the government to hold a debate in the House of Commons on government time into that important 2013 report so that we can discuss what needs to be happening. Now, I can see the kind of question bubbles above your head. So, what, you know, you're very well saying what the government's got wrong, but what kinds of things would your government do if it were elected? And we make no presumptions about this. We've got to work hard to win back the support of the British people, and we're making progress. But what would we do to boost social mobility? And I'll just go through a few before concluding. Look, on growth and achieving a more balanced recovery that reduces living costs and improves earnings for all, instead of prioritising giving the top 1% of earners a tax cut in the order of £100,000, we'd give over 24 million working people on middle and lower incomes a 10p starting rate of tax. On jobs, I was talking about the high rates of youth unemployment. We'd introduce a compulsory jobs guarantee for young people and the long-term unemployed to get them back into work, a bit like the Future Jobs Fund that we had when we were in office. On apprenticeships and training, which I think is so important, we'd insist that companies taking large government contracts, like many of the firms, the company I suppose that Herbert Smith acts for, we'd insist that if they take on those contracts that they deliver more apprenticeships. On childcare, we'd expand free childcare for 3- and 4-year-olds from 15 to 25 hours per week for working parents. On pay, in our policy review, we're looking right now at how we can increase the value of the minimum wage and encourage the payment of a living wage. And of course, something that I'm so passionate about, for our wealth creators and entrepreneurs, I'm absolutely determined that we provide you with the proper support to grow, start up, lead your business, your own business, one of the most important drivers for social mobility. And I could go on. There are lots of other things that we have said that we will do. So we will celebrate the progress of black people, people of colour in all fields. We will not only continue to tackle the race inequalities that are holding people back, but importantly, we will seek to achieve greater social mobility as well to make ours a more equal society of shared opportunities and prosperity. And this is vital. It is absolutely vital because everybody should have hope. Hope for a better tomorrow. Hope to make the most of their potential. It's about having a purpose. It's about aspiring and being inspired. It's about looking to our heroes and looking to our future. And that calls on us to act. And it brings to mind, of course, as ever, some powerful words from Dr. Martin Luther King, who said this: "We are now faced with the fact that tomorrow is today. We are confronted with the fierce urgency of now. In this unfolding conundrum of life and history, there is such a thing as being too late. There is no time for apathy or complacency. This is a time for vigorous and positive action." Well, I say amen to that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chika. Those are very inspiring words indeed.